Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Wonders of the Night Sky, You Must See Before You Die by Bob King, known as Astro Bob. And sort of reading this, I sort of realise sort of back what the sort of generalised problem is. Say you have an astronomical event coming up, you know, and it's not the conjunction of planets, it's the conjunction of people and education. You really want to log on and get lasers, telescopes, everything and information just dumped at you, ready to go. So you say you're in such and such a suburb, you're doing it, and people, all the resources get put to you. It's not the planets which are conjunction, it's the actual resources. So people go off and they say, oh, I'm going to give a talk, and I'm going to go off my own knowledge and what's in a textbook. You can do so much more if things are coordinated to come across. Okay, we've done two planet conjunction, and that's, we'll go into three planet conjunction. So this is where things appear are so in the same part of the sky. But let's look at this. While two planet pairings aren't uncommon, seeing three glimmering together in a small corner of the sky is as rare as winning big in Vegas. But if you're prepared, I guarantee the jackpot is attainable. Because the moon of the planets are known with great precision, it's simply a matter of keeping track of the upcoming conjunctions and making sure you get outside during the several nights the planets will be close together. I should be honest at the outset to say that the chances of all three planets lining up exactly in one atop of another is, well, astronomical. That's why we can't be called spade a spade and identify these triple events as exactly what they are, dual pair conjunction. Okay, so these occur when three planets gather so closely together that the two closest conjunctions occur within days of each other. For instance, in 1981, Mars was in conjunction with Jupiter, followed 4 days later by conjunction with Venus. Conjunction with Mars close by, the planets are practically tripped over each other's feet. Which I suppose this conjunction is they are vertically underneath each other in the sky. It really doesn't matter. Oh, there's one. Mars, Venus and Jupiter. When three planets gather, typically at dusk or dawn with Venus and Mercury involved, you need those. You can't see Venus in the middle of the night. The individual motion creates an ever-changing series of triangular groupings that are delightful to watch as the shapes shift from night to night. One of the last really nice triplet planets occurred in mid-June 1991. On the June 17th that year, Venus, Mars and Jupiter crowded in just 1.8 degrees of sky. So the moon is half a degree, so that's an amount easily covered by the extended thumb. Two nights prior, the crescent moon joined the scene for a memorable evening of twilight sight. Little did I know that the time that the previous triple crush had happened was 90 years earlier, when Mars, Jupiter and Saturn banded together on November 28th, 1901. Holy cow, even my grandparents were too young to see that one. Okay, and this is a thing that you'll be able to see Mercury, Jupiter and Saturn just after sunset on January the 10th, 2021. Type 3 planet groupings are fairly rare, but several are visible through the 2020s. The most compact of the groups, the more infrequent their occurrence. So to give us a shot at seeing one, I've expanded the definition to include planets that pass within several degrees of each other. While not necessarily in conjunction, they'll be close enough to one another to make an eye-catching sight. Though four or more planet conjunctions may be possible, this extreme rarity means waiting for many generations, so you might find satisfaction in a substitute event. Not a conjunction exactly, but more a lineup of planets across one section of the sky. While uncommon, these occur more frequently than compact triples that are worth seeking out. To find out more and how to view, see page 95. How to see triple planet conjunctions gathering. Because they can last several days, the odds of beating the clouds increases, so you can usually catch one of these triple treats on at least one night. I've peered into my crystal ball software to find opportunities through to 2022 and listed them below. Be patient and hope the clear skies, you'll see them soon enough. Okay, so he's got one here. I suppose the 2021 I'll refer to. Start at dawn, low in the southern sky, linear grouping of Saturn, Mars, and Jupiter. Now that's what wouldn't align 6.5 degrees, a little more than three fingers held at arm length. So they're pretty, you know, that's pretty good. It's amazing how big the moon is and isn't. Okay, so yeah, what can I say? Make me interested. Yeah. I think I'm going to die before that. Okay, now item number four. Summer Milky Way. Now, of course, Australia in the Southern Hemisphere, we have the Milky Way. You know, great, because we're sort of pointing it, you know, a bit more towards the centre of the galaxy. We see more Milky Way. There are two Milky Ways, winter and summer. The summer version is by far the brighter and easier to see. It is also the time of year when we're more likely to be outside at night. January's Milky Way looks anemic by comparison, but the crosses the sky in a identical fashion as the July counterpart. I love the sight of both and look forward to their return every year. Yeah, I just find that, I've got to get myself mentally thinking. I don't know what the axis of the Earth. So Sagittarius is where the centre of the galaxy is. Then someone asks where you live. You give them your address and perhaps a city and a state too. But a more complete answer might be something like the country, continent, planet, solar system, Orion Arm, Milky Way, galaxy. We could keep on going: local group, Virgo cluster, Lankia supercluster, universe. But let's stop at the galaxy level, a place big enough to rock your mind with the enormity of it all. Dream big, right? That's what they say. Well, there's no dreaming needed here. The Milky Way is seen from the outside, looks like a pointless pinwheel dotted with nearly 400 billion stars. Well, there you go. It's gone up from 100 billion to 200 billion in my lifetime. It's 400 billion. Some gather in the central bar-shaped feature of the galaxy's hub. Those stars spiral arms, flattened disc, while others defy the limits of the galactic halo. The whole work spans 100,000 light years. So if you say 1,000 light years is a millimetre, you can make a pancake 10 centimetres across. It isn't so unimaginably vast it takes 100,000 years for a beam of light to travel from one side of the galaxy to the other. Even if we shrunk the Earth to the size of a grape, the galaxy would, at the same scale, would still be 55 billion miles from wide, or nearly 12 times the distance to Pluto. Yeah, this is just enormous. So this is why I think everyone does it, but they throw away the scale. So that's why I think we should have a trillion scale. Our solar system resides in one of the spiral arms, a minor one called the Orion Arm, about halfway or 260,000 light years from the galaxy's centre, where the supermassive black hole of 4.5 million more masses than the Sun bides its time like a spider in the centre of its web, waiting for stray stars and asteroids to pass within its gravitational grasp. Bullshit. And so you're only at risk if you're a binary, and it will rip off the central star, one star, and spit out the other, conserving angular momentum. In some way, we look across the inner spiral arms towards the star-rich central bulge. The reason the Milky Way let's read what they have to say. I'm finding it hard to understand this. And I don't know whether in winter we face outward the outer spiral arms, where the stars ultimately thin out and give way to virtual starless intergalactic space. Without the density and number of stars to bulk up the view, the winter Milky Way band lacks the intensity of the summer's. The northern hemisphere scale watches summer's proclative life and winter's dearth of it find their counterparts in the two Milky Ways. Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Gee, I'm mentally conflicted by this. Oh, no. Yeah, what happens is that, yeah, you're in the Northern Hemisphere and you can see part of the Milky Way opposite the Sun. And that's also true in the Southern Hemisphere. We see the opposite of the Sun. So your winter is our summer Milky Way, and it's just, yeah, so we're looking at the same position, but we're looking further angular down. That sort of makes sense. Okay, I just had to go through my head. If we lived in a giant galaxy not only made of stars but sprinkled liberally with interstellar dust, threaded by immense clouds of cold gas and populated with billions of planets and trillions of comets and asteroids, why doesn't it simply fill up the sky? Instead, we see a cloud ribbon at night. The solar system is embedded in the middle of the galaxy's flat disk, where, along with the bulge, most of the Milky Way stars are concentrated. When we gaze at the band of the... When we get a band of the Milky Way, we peer through the disk, billions of stars across, thousands of light years light from side to side. Most are too distant to see individually. Instead, the pinpoints of suns blend together to form a misty band of light that, for the first time, viewers resembles an arc of clouds. But make no mistake, the clouds are comprised of billions of suns. So, did he say 400 billion suns? If you follow the band around the sky, you're looking through tens of thousands of light years of stars, much like standing on the edge of a forest and looking in. You can make out the foreground trees, but the more distant one look every bit of open space until there's nothing but dense thicket. If we look up and down the galactic plane, we gaze past only about 5,000 light years worth of stars and enters the emptiness of galactic space. The stars thin out in a hurry. There aren't enough of them to create a band. Instead, we see them randomly scattered across the sky. All the stars you see on a clear night belong to our galaxy, just as a visitor to the alien planet of the Andromeda galaxy will only see stars belonging to their galaxy. Because we're stuck on Earth, we can only see half of the Milky Way band at a time. The other half is blocked by the horizon. I sort of get what they're saying. But if you could jump in a spaceship and zoom away from Earth, say between here and the Moon, what a sight would await. Safely tethered to the spacecraft on a spacewalk, you could roll your body this way and that and follow the Milky Way band with your eyes the full 360 degrees. Talk about amazing. In space, there are no Milky Way seasons. But the view is not that bad down here on Earth. On late July night, when the Milky Way follows the fuzzy phosphorescent river from horizon to horizon, all you need to do is look up and take it in. No thinking required. Few sights are more magnificent or impart such a grand sense of scale. Against the starry yardstick, we might measure the arrow of our lives, reflecting on how we arrived at this place and where we hope to go. Sometimes you need the whole galaxy to get a handle on the crazy thing called life. They've got a really poor picture here. How to see the summer Milky Way at its best. For Australia, that's the winter Milky Way. While the summer... the Southern Cross is actually in the middle Milky Way. And Orion's in the Milky Way. And Cassiopeia, the Summer Triangle, and Scorpius. So they're interesting things to see. Okay. While the summer Milky Way can be viewed on late winter mornings before dawn, or the winter Milky Way can be viewed before dawn in late summer, we'll stick to convenient evening hours. For a full appreciation, plan your viewing seasons around the time of the new moon, so the new moonlight will comprise the starlight. The table below lists the dates of the upcoming new moons. 3 or 4 nights either side of the new moon is fine. If you live in the countryside where the light pollution isn't an issue, you're all set. Most of us will need to drive to a dark sky to soak up the galactic grandeur. Can I say, there is nothing like, I can't remember, this is way back in Huey's. Now, this is before Black Hawks and stuff like that, Huey's. And at night in Huey, with just looking out, just incredible, incredible stars. The resource section on page 23, I've included light pollution link, and there you'll find a map of towns, roads, highways, and color-coded overlay that show where light pollution is least and greatest. Select a place within driving distance, or better yet, plan a late summer excursion to a state or national park located far from city lights. And can I say, Glenbrook's not that bad, because we've got a big hill between us and the city. Okay, the Milky Winter, Milky Way. 5. I thought long about whether to include the summer Milky Way as alter ego in this book, and decided it would be an oversight not to do so. After all, a run of galaxies we see in June and July and August are absolutely magnificent. Is only half the story. The Milky Way's lonelier half stretches like a long, wispy scarf from Cassiopeia's high in the northern sky across Perseus, Arcturus, and then through Gemini, just touching Orion at Betelgeuse, therefore widening to the major, pushing past Puppis, Stern, and southern bending to the haze of the southern horizon. There it is. There's a big map here, but that's definitely right. That's the Milky Way there. So Betelgeuse is a very famous red star, one of my favourite stars here. And you can see in this picture the Pleiades. I love the Pleiades. Pleiades is the seven sisters. It's such a, it's the most emotionally intense group of stars I know, the Pleiades. Orion's nice to look at. And so you've got here, I can't quite see what the... Cirrus, they've got Cirrus down here. So Cirrus is right in the Milky Way. So I don't know how that goes through. Okay, while a fair number of people have seen or heard of the summer Milky Way, few are acquainted with the fainter winter half. And yet, it's not hard to see. Anywhere, you'll easily spy the summer star clouds work for winter too. From my home, the outskirts of an overly lit medium-sized city, I still see the rise of Orion and Gemini in the eastern side in December. And this section of the galaxy is thinner in places and does not split down the middle by clouds of interstellar dust like summer time, but it otherwise looks the same. So yeah, just trying to, and I wonder what it means to split down. Oh, it is split down. That is right. The summer Milky Way has, I don't know if they've actually got a picture of it here. No, they don't. For all that, they don't have a picture of it. The summer Milky Way has, is bright, but it's got a dark section in it due to interstellar gas. You look up where the constellation Ortuga and Taurus touch each other. So Taurus is quite easy to see because it's the bull. You'll have the galaxy's anti-center. Oh, that's interesting. That's, you're pointing out away from it. That's interesting. So Taurus is interesting. I can find Taurus very easily. It's got a bright red star in it. Look there and you'll see. You'll face the vastness of intergalactic space, a virtually starless gulf that separates our galaxy from the next. Now, close your eyes and picture the billowy star clouds and the core of the galaxy at your back, the galaxy's frontier ahead. But you're standing right in the middle of it all. Feel a little giddy? I know I have. Tried this on a winter night for a perspective blowing experience. As you follow the Milky Way star-studded band around Cirrus, Canis the Granted Dog, it winds with a promise to be soon merges the horizon haze. Sky watchers in the tropics can continue to follow past Pupus and Canna and Crooks, Kinnis and Norma until it re-emerges in the southern, the summer Milky Way in Scorpius. The whole Milky Way wraps around us like a great wreath, a complete circle encompassing both hemispheres. We see the galaxies, billions of suns all around us because the solar system is neither above nor below the galaxy's flattened disk but embedded inside it. When we look through the disk rather than above or below it, billions of stars stack up across tens of thousands of light years to form a starry belt of the Milky Way. Most of them are distant, so their light blends into a luminous fog. That's why binoculars and telescopes come in handy. They gather and magnify the light of the distant stars, showing us millions upon millions of them instead of roughly 5,000 we see with the naked eye. So that's how many stars do you see in the naked eye? 5,000. It would be a good school exercise is to take a square of sky and count the number of stars you see in it. And so if you take a 1 centimeter and 1 degree by 1 degree region of star, that sky, what does that correspond to? That corresponds to 300 10,000ths of a star. 3.8 by 3.8 is roughly 3.6 by 3.6 is 10, and then 100 by 100 is 10,000. So it's 100,000. It's 100 by 100. So it's 10,000ths of the star. So why does the winter half look so anemic? Galaxy measures about 100,000 light years across, with the solar system 26,000 light years halfway between the centre and the edge. In summer, when the night falls, we face towards the interior galaxy with this massive star-rich bulge. In winter, we look directly opposite bulge, and the outskirts of the Milky Way with stars thin out, giving way to intergalactic space. How to see the winter Milky Way? If you are now championing the bit for a more fulfilling Milky Way experience, plan an outing on the moonless winter night. Dress warmly and get out of town to a dark sky. Winter makes finding a spot to park and observe trickier because the favourite road pullouts and parking areas can be covered with deep snow, or if you're in Yankee land. Plan your trips at any time from about 3 days past the full moon to up to 3 days before the new moon, and 2 weeks window of each month. Take a friend along to keep you company and share the experience. The best evenings to view is from mid-December through to mid-March, but you can also see, etc. I'm not going to read this. Andromeda Galaxy number 6. So we're 20 minutes in. Andromeda Galaxy. I love the Andromeda Galaxy. I think it's the Northern Hemisphere only. If all you know is the Milky Way galaxy, then you simply must meet the Andromeda. We're fortunate to live in a time when we have some understanding of the size of the universe as well as the true nature of many of its inhabitants. What? Oh, not definitely inhabitants. Yes, hon? Okay, back reading again. Andromeda. So, we might get the origin. It's got a Greek story of this woman who's been a daughter of a king who's put out for the sea monster to be eaten. Sort of not going to make a great Disney movie, but in terms of this 1 millimeter equals 1,000 light year, your pancake's 10 centimeters across, Andromeda's 2 meters away. So at the next table to give you some sort of idea. And it's also slightly bigger, but let's listen. And according to this, it's 400 billion stars. I had 200 billion stars in our galaxy. Let's read it. 100 years ago, astronomers were debating whether the dusty clouds of newborn stars were in the Milky Way or free-wheeling galaxies like ours many millions of light years away. Even the processes by which stars are made their own heat and light eluded the best minds of the time. that changed. Hydrogen fusion is the coal of our stars. Galaxies of every shape and size reach to the ends of the visible universe. Although most galaxies require a telescope to see, a few are visible to the naked eye, and notably the two Magellanic clouds, satellites of the Milky Way, and the Andromeda Galaxy. So the Magellanic clouds are either side of the Southern Cross, sucker. And they stick out from the Milky Way. That's pretty interesting to see. Okay. We'll meet clouds late in a later entry. So let's get to know Andromeda, starting from a couple of superlatives. It's 2.5 million light years away, or 2.3, that's according to me. And the farthest thing most humanity will ever see without an optical aid. While it resembles our galaxy with a flattened disk, the bulge in the middle and spiral arms is more than twice as big. 220,000 light years across. Oh, right. And contains approximately 1 trillion stars. Well, that's the number of star counts has doubled. So that is a pancake 22 centimetres across. Still impressed, Andromeda is speeding in our direction around 2,000 kilometres per hour. 402,000 kilometres an hour. So just to put up the moon is it's coming a moon distance to us every hour. That makes sense. So the moon distance is roughly 400,000 kilometres away, and that's a light second. So every hour, so it's going at about a thousandth the speed of light. It's pretty amazing. Or a 3,600th the speed of light. And it's going to collide with us. And we'll collide with the Milky Way in 4 billion years. Okay, that makes sense. We didn't lose sleep over the thought, partly because it's a long time from now, but also because even when the galaxy's merged, the chance of the star hitting a star is incredibly remote. But it's a certainty that the galaxy's massive interstellar clouds, I guess, will collide, compress, and give birth to a sparkling array of new stars and star clusters in an eye-popping galactic fireworks display. So how many years is four billion years. That's a fair fraction. The universe is 13.8 billion years. That's a fair distance in the future. And our star's gone. On the other hand, there's a 50-50 chance our solar system will be flung from the core to a newly formed super galaxy and ejected entirely from the system. A 12% chance. In either case, no real effects would be felt on Earth. That's assuming Earth is still around at that late date. A billion years from now, the sun will shine brighter than it does today, raising the average surface temperature of the planet to 47 degrees Celsius. Compare that today with the average 16 degrees. If it gets hotter, in 3 billion years, the average temperature will reach 149 degrees C. Bacteria might be able to survive in the ferocious heat, but little else will. When the two galaxies become one, simple organisms may still find a niche environments underground on top of the tallest mountains. But the game of life will likely come to an end in 7.5 billion years hence, when the sun balloons to a great red giant and engulfs the entire planet in fiery girth. We know this is coming. If humanity can survive itself, it will have long since filled our space tugs with seeds and souvenirs and moved to planets of friendly forecasts. Well, that's an interesting thing to do. It's nice the way he's put this. Of course, it's the CNO cycle which is going to take up and top up the sun. This is why the sun gets hotter. There's another fusion mechanism, a more high-speed fusion mechanism which uses the waste gases from the triple alpha. Triple alpha means three heliums come together to make carbon, which then gives you a new fusion pathway. Andromeda invites big thoughts. So this is why things, the sun gets progressively hotter all the time. It's got this runaway pollutant inside it. Andromeda invites big thoughts about time, evolution, the future, far different from what it's been, and even the wisest mind among us can predict. Make your own pilgrimages to the galaxy, galactic oracle, on any clear fall and winter evening when the constellation Andromeda climbs overhead. Photographs and larger telescopes show the galaxy as a star-spangled chameleon roll with a butter-hued centre and arcs of dust and silhouetted against the blended light of billions of suns. So this is this Cassiopeia, which is, I think it has shadow in it. There's Andromeda scale. I don't know whether that's visible from the southern sky. With the naked eye, it looks just like a snippet of the Milky Way adrift from the mothership. That is to say, it's a dim, fuzzy patch of light about 2 degrees across, which is four times the full moon across. Or not quite the width of your thumb held at arm's length. Using inverted vision, the technique for looking around at faint objects instead of directly at it, you can notice that the centre looks brighter. That's right. Yeah. So your night vision is best on peripheral. So this is, again, in the army, they taught you how to patrol at night by using your peripheral vision. It's pretty amazing stuff. So you had to not look directly at things. And again, you take scouts on walks at night, and they're tripping over everything because they haven't been trained. Have your binoculars, then you'll even more detail and expand the size of the galaxy at least twofold. A big oval glow will fill the field of view in your 6-inch telescope and allow a medium magnification of 40 to 1,000 times 100. You'll get a clear view of the bright core disk and even a hint of cosmic dust stripes. Larger telescopes uncover the same critters we see closer to home in the Milky Way. Open globular clusters, nebula, and even occasional nova, a type of stellar explosion. No doubt Andromeda has rich planets as a home galaxy. It may be some of them have eyes looking in our directions, wondering who or what might be looking back. How to see Andromeda? You don't need a pitch-black skies to view Andromeda. Outer suburbs where at least part of the night sky is free from serious light pollution should be fine. Best viewing times when the galaxy is highest and free from pollution listed below. The W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia, and the great square Pegasus will point you up there. Culmination refers to the time when these objects are highest in the night sky. I really wish I knew how that goes, but look at that. Look at that. Okay, that's a... I really think is that if it's not day, they should actually have... they're showing a picture of Andromeda hitting our galaxy, but they should put a date time in it. Binoculars should... okay. When you see a galaxy without optical aid, I strongly recommend binoculars for this and some other must-see sights. They don't have to be expensive or powerful. Ideal sizes include various things. Binoculars should be easy to hold in your hand, give you sharp, in-focus images, and have good eye relief anywhere from 14 to 20 millimeters, i.e. you should have to hold them right up against the eye. Eye relief is how far your eye can be from the eyepiece and still take the whole field of view. Generally, the more is better. If you wear glasses like I do, it's crucial. Otherwise, part of the view will be cut off. By the way, most binoculars come with rubber eye cups. If you want to leave them up, you can compromise eye relief. Okay, so you can... This is for your eyes. I always fold them down. Okay, so... Field of view. The width of the field you see when looking through binoculars is also important. Wider fields of view are preferred. They give the picture of window quality to the view and cover more sky, making it easier to spot what you're looking for. Shoot for a field of view of 5 to 7 degrees. One final thought is about magnification. You might think the more power is better. Indeed, you'll find plenty of times 15 and times 25 binoculars for sale. But extra magnification comes with drawbacks. First, 15 times binoculars are much harder to keep steady in your hand. Every beat of your heart will jostle the view, so to effectively use them, you should be fixed on a tripod. Second, both the field of view and eye relief generally shrink the more magnification is increased. If you have the money, consider a pair of image-stabilised binoculars. These are specially designed instruments to take shake out of viewing by using a battery-operated stabilisation mechanism. Press the button, wait 2 seconds, and shake disappears even if you move the binoculars from target to target. The detail and fainter stars visible may convince you that they're worth the price. Check the resources page on 216 and end of the book, the model suggestions. No matter what you buy, try a variety of binoculars and outdoor recreation store before making a purchase. Well, there you go. Now, again, this is the Northern Hemisphere. No, this is Ursula Major. This, I think, has a pole star in it. The Great Bear. Is that the Great Dipper? I think that's just another Great Dipper. We often think the Great Dipper is Orion's Belt. That's how stupid we are. And the Little Dipper is Pegasus. But let's see. This is number 7, Ursula Major, the Great Bear. Some of our must-see it's require travel or special circumstances such as eclipse, but not Ursula Major, the Great Bear. I included this constellation because it's visible much of the year and bears a good resemblance to the namesake, something that can't be said for some of the 87 sky figures. You're probably already familiar with the 7 bright stars that outline the Big Dipper and the eye-catching asterism that wheels around the pole star in the northern sky. Many picture this ladle as a long-headed pot, but or a plough, or plow in Britain. Long before it was in America, most Europeans saw it as a wagon or a chariot. So this is a northern hemisphere thing, the Big Dipper, and many Australians think they can see the Big Dipper, but it's not there. Oh, there, hello, Teddy. You might wonder, then, how it can be called the bear. There's a clue in the name, the constellation of Ursula, a she-bear. Some scholars trace the constellation origin to Callisto, a nymph of the ancient Greek mythology who was transformed into a bear by Hera, the wife of Zeus, as punishment for having an affair with her husband. Later, while foraging in the woods, Callisto spotted her son Acus, who was out hunting. Forgetting she was a bear, Callisto ran towards him, but Acus, seeing an easy kill, drew his bow and fired the arrow. Before it struck, Zeus sent a great wind to carry them both to the heavens, forming Callisto and Ursula Major and Acus into neighbouring constellation, Butes, and both travel in tandem around the pole star to this day. Oh, well, there you go. And this is the entire thing of, you know, stars. You're a star, means that you've made it become actually a star. Even further back in time, Native Americans, including the Iroquois and Great Lakes in Indiana, saw different sorts of bears based on their own traditions. 3 stars are handles, with 3 brave warriors in pursuit of a bear outlined by 4 stars in the Dipper's bowl. Miza, the star in the bend of the handle, was a little companion named Star Acor, which represented the pot for cooking up their catch. When the hunters finally catch up with the bear, they spear it, and the blood drips through the wounds, is said to turn the leaves of red every fall. Alright, it's amazing how this is there. For its familiarity, the Big Dipper isn't a true constellation, but an asterism. So asterism means that it's just a familiar shape, a bright pattern of stars within a constellation, or shared by multiple constellations. That's easy to recognise. Asterisms are helpful waypoints to navigate the constellation of fainter stars. The Big Dipper makes it easy to find fainter stars, an outline Shlomo. So I think asterism, aster means starism. While the Great Bear is visible nearly year round, but from mid-northern latitude, it looks almost impressive from mid to late summer, when the oscillation pads towards the northwestern horizon like its namesake, ambling through the forest, looking for a good hibernation location. In winter, the bear climbs up to the northeastern sky, standing on its tail like some cartoon circus bear. In spring, it's high overhead and upside down. In winter, its paws and legs cut off the northern horizon. Can I say the southern hemisphere is just much, much better in terms of stars. Summer is the season to check the celestial bear off your list. If nothing else, to do it for Callisto, who turns out to be falsely accused, forced into a tryst against her will by the devious Zeus. How to see the Great Bear. Find a location with a reasonably dark sky and face northwest at nightfall during one of the times listed below. Halfway up the northwestern sides, you'll see a familiar seven stars, the Big Dipper. Picture three in the handle of the bear's tail and two across the top of the bowl's animal rump back. Extend the line for bowl at night west to pick up several of the stars that outline the head and dip the nose back to the bowl. Now follow the arc of stars below the left downward and trace the leg and paw that ends in two claws. Return to the right side of the bowl, extend the line directly below the skinny second leg of the paw dipped by claws. Arc back to the bottom of the head and tip to the nose composed of again. Not bad likeness, what would you say? I'd say you're nuts. Okay, so I'll get this off and we'll go up to the lunar eclipse.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.